Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 8th. No. It is the 26th day of February.
You were way off.
I was way off.
Yeah.
I was looking at the time. 12:08 when I said that. The 26th day of February, Anno Domini 2022. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at what is now 9 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things that choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. But first,
I need one of the adapters.
You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free, 1-800-790-0415. So, the Windows 11 requirements caused some serious debate last year, with Microsoft stating the requirements are in place for security reasons. Microsoft's decision angered many folks who were looking forward to Windows 11. Really? And several workarounds were discovered to bypass the requirements. Even if your device does not meet the requirements, it is possible to force install the OS onto your device.
Like, that's a good reason.
You're right. In fact, Microsoft has an official registry hack to bypass the TPM and CPU checks in the installation assistant and install Windows 11 on any hardware capable of running Windows 10. In the same documentation, Microsoft previously warned that devices failing to meet requirements will no longer be guaranteed to receive updates. Microsoft officials also said it is not recommended to force install Windows 11 as the requirements ensure better performance. I really should just go home and back to bed. If you've already installed Windows 11 on unsupported devices, you might notice a new watermark on the desktop. The watermark, which appears above the taskbar clock, is similar to the Windows Not Activated error, but it won't affect apps, windows, or web browsers. The desktop mark simply states system requirements not met. And it may irritate some users, but it should not come as too much of a surprise, as Microsoft previously warned users of possible damage. The alert will also appear within the settings app, and it will remind users that the device isn't officially supported. So far, these notifications can be safely ignored, and they do not affect the overall user experience. There are no indications that Microsoft is planning to display the unsupported device alert on top of open apps. Microsoft has also implemented a pop-up that appears during the installation of the OS and tells users the drawbacks of installing Windows 11 on a PC failing to meet the minimum spec. The pop-up makes it clear that there can be compatibility issues, possible damage, and other problems if you go ahead with the installation of Windows 11 on an unsupported PC. Additionally, Microsoft has confirmed that it won't offer any guarantee on regular or even crucial security updates for unsupported devices. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Microsoft is testing a desktop watermark for unsupported Windows 11 PCs. Your choices are, it won't bother me, it will be annoying. Oh no, not a watermark. Not moving to Windows 11 anyway. Windows and others. So far, we have 31 votes, and Windows is ahead, followed fairly closely to not moving to Windows 11 anyway, and trailing that, oh no, not a watermark, then it will be annoying, it will bother me. And so far, nobody has said other. But if you do say other, or if you just have things you want to say, it's pretty easy to do. All you had to do is head on over to our website at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, you'll see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 26 Feb 2022. Microsoft is testing a desktop watermark for unsupported Windows 11 PCs. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Speaking of operating systems, did you see what new news came out? As far as the
OS X and Raspberry Pi has
Raspberry Pi okay. With the Twister. They are now coming out with a version that will support the 64-bit Raspberry Pi operating system. So they're going now, Twister is going full, you know, from 32-bit to 64-bit, and the tons of apps that are, and this is kind of funny too, the apps have already started to way ahead of everything else. And go of to course, 64-bit.
Right. One of the reasons Windows is so slow is that it's a mix of 32 and 64-bit stuff.
That messes it up all the time.
And switching those, changing state inside the CPU is a very intensive and long-running operation. So, you know, if you have to switch, if you're running five or six apps, three of them are 64-bit, three of them are 32-bit, it slows the system down quite considerably.
Mm-hmm.
Linux, in general, does not have that issue. Even Macs didn't have that issue, mostly, when they were Intel chips, because most of the apps were 64-bit.
And Apple enforced 64-bit OSs a couple of versions ago.
Right. And most of the apps you could download were already 64-bit.
So that's why I'm really excited to be
Windows
able to update
it. Right, right. So you'll update it'll be good to update it.
Ugh.
But when it comes to this thing that it was in the news, look, people love to be on the newest version of anything, but they don't like to buy new hardware to do it.
Yeah.
And I get that. I absolutely, believe me when I tell you I get that. But the reality is that, you know, every once in a while, you're going to run up against something that doesn't work on the old hardware. Get over yourself. You can force it, but, you know, don't be surprised or upset, certainly, when, you know, Microsoft says, yeah, you're not getting updates. Yeah, we don't support you. Yeah, take a hike.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, though. It's forcing more and more folks to want either go with Linux or go with a Raspberry Pi and put on one of these other operating systems, so you're not paying for, you know, a system that's going to do updates and crash your system. Especially, I can't wait for my other Raspberry Pi to show up so I can get Linux on it.
Right.
Because I've got a monitor already upstairs that I can hook up an HDMI cable from there to my Raspberry Pi. And all I got to do is on the back of the monitor is just toggle whether, you know, it's HDMI 1 or 2.
Right.
No big. I'm really excited about PlayRock because I've already played with it a little bit on an older PC I had. And it's like, yeah, the monitor's not the brightest.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
It's like, yeah, I want to get it on.
Yeah.
So I'm counting down the days.
I'll tell you, I there's absolutely nothing that I personally do that I need Windows for. I just don't. I have it on a VM on my Linux box, and I haven't even booted it up. Except to answer people's computer questions in my newspaper, my newsletter column. Other than that, I don't even boot it up anymore.
I did that yesterday to boot up a VM so I could make a Windows Surface recovery disk.
Oh, yeah.
And it said, you have updates to install. Oh, and it wouldn't let me continue.
Well, that's one thing I did this past week. I was looking at the various software packages because it kind of got me thinking. And it's like, wait a minute. And I started going down, and it's like, wait a minute. It also supports this. Whoa.
All you know, because
before
you do.
I was thinking just Mac or PC. Now all of a sudden you look at the list, and it's Ubuntu, Raspberry Pi, Raspbian. You know, I mean, the list is so much bigger.
It's a huge list, and everyone has a little bit of a different thing to it. And if you look through the list of supported programs, you'll find a lot of the radio programs that you run are – downloadable right through.
Yeah, they'll work. You know,
packaging.
They'll work on it.
Yep.
And like I say, that's where it's great, folks. You know, I want to learn a new operating system. I can understand that. You know, going to something new can be scary. That's why, and I know you've advocated it before, Nick, is take, say, an older system.
Yep.
And if you've got an older box, you know, set it by the side. It doesn't have to have a ton of memory in the space in there. Just to play around with. If it crashes, oh, well, it's not your main operating system, but you can play around and watch the tutorials on how to do different stuff and get up to speed.
That's what I did, 30 years ago? when I first started running Linux, I was running Windows as my main machine. I got a secondary box and started running some stuff on it. And it took me a while, but I found myself spending more and more time on the Linux box than on the Windows box.
Well, they've made it look so much like Windows. You really don't know it. Right. Well, for the most part,
you can. My desktop doesn't look anything like Windows anymore.
Well, did you start with just the command prompt? Because we started with DOS and command prompts.
I started with the command prompt.
I started with CPM and command prompts.
That's right. and when all of the parameters were backwards.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because whatever you did on CPM, it was, for example, if you did a copy command,
pip.
It was copy from to,
yeah.
This was to from.
Yeah.
And all of the things were backwards. That screwed me up so badly when I started with DOS. That screwed me up so badly.
Yeah, because you
got to
think
DOS.
The reverse. Yeah.
Exactly. But I'd been using CPM for a very long time. We sold North Star computers, which were absolutely my favorites back in the day. It was a backplane. So all you got was the slots. Mm-hmm. And you'd plug a processor board into one, mm-hmm. and a memory board into another, and a drive board into another.
Yep.
And so you could add five or six processor boards. You know, you had eight slots. So you could put in, you know, seven memory slots.
You were in hog heaven.
You'd do whatever you wanted to do.
Yeah. Yep.
And upgrading your operating system was as easy as swapping out the CPU board. Yep.
We started in college, had DEC Rainbows and PDP-8s. And so I learned CPM and RISTUS. And apparently that wasn't very common in Rochester years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so my first...
Well, it depends on where you were. RIT was using
CPM.
My first few jobs I got because I knew CPM and RISTUS.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because everyone else was System 38.
Right.
And right. That, it was long
no, before... No, 36.
36 yeah, probably yeah. 36. Yeah, yeah. And it was long before DOS.
Yeah. Yeah, but those are... Oh, man, those were the days. Those
Xerox...
Well, and that's the other thing. I
eventually learned Xerox Star.
Right.
Yeah.
We were the pioneers, and we were fearless.
Yep.
You know? Oh, here's a new operating system.
No, we weren't fearless. We were just too dumb.
We're stupid.
Stupid and having too much fun.
Right.
Oh, look what I can do.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that was it. Let's see what I can do with this new system.
And if you crashed it, start again.
Start again. That's not a problem. Now, if it doesn't work exactly the same every time I put my fingers on the keyboard, I can't use it.
Yep.
Yeah.
I tried to get my college to accept the seven computer languages I knew for my foreign language requirement, but they insisted it be a human language. But it didn't say that in the degree requirements anywhere.
Right.
It just said foreign language.
Right.
Yeah.
Doesn't get much more foreign than Fortran.
Well, that's where COBOL and
right.
Well, that's
PLR
where. That's where you should have turned to that administrator that was, denying you. Say, all right, well, then you write the code for it.
Yeah,
exactly. I will tell you that I currently am having a problem now because I know the two languages I use the most, not the only two languages I know, but the two languages I use most these days are PHP and Python. And I'm at that stage where I start to type something and I go, no, that's Python, and I'm in PHP now. And I have to go back.
Shifting gears.
Yeah, and I have to shift gears completely. And
they both start with a P, so it should be the same, right?
It should be. They should be identical.
It's a B when you're getting older, isn't it?
Throw in some P01, then.
Right. So I'm at that stage. You know, you get to that stage when you're learning languages.
It's called getting old.
It is called getting old, and it beats the alternative, maybe. You know what? Don't be afraid of a new operating system. Don't be afraid of a new language. You're not as old as you pretend to be, and you're certainly not stupid. So stop pretending to be stupid.
Yeah,
Apple used that as a marketing campaign in the Vista and what was after Vista? XP.
XP.
And then Windows 8. As a PC user, you're going to have to learn a new way of doing things. You might as well get a Mac.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Macs underneath are Macs underneath are the mock kernel, which is essentially a Unix variant, which is a like Linux, a Unix variant. I remember when Tony Placilla, first brought a Mac in, and you brought the Mac in, Tony Placilla and I pushed him out of the way, and he said, "Well, how do we get to the command line? Oh, look, it does this. Oh, this works. Oh, it really is." Linux underneath, a Unix variant underneath. And you were so angry. You wanted to show us, and rightfully so, you wanted to show us all the really cool things in the Mac OS. Mm-hmm. And all we cared about was the command line. Get out of the way. But yeah.
Hardcore.
We were hardcore in those days. But again, that's the thing about this. There's so much you can do in a computer, and there's so many ways to manage it. And there's so many different front ends to it. For example, I finally downloaded Flex. The problem I was having, I realized, I could download it, but then I couldn't decompress it and install it. And I realized it requires an 8 gig USB drive. And that meant it had to have at least 8 gig free on the hard drive in order to decompress, and I only had 6 gig free on my drive. So I had to wait until my wife wasn't on her machine to do it on hers. But I finally got that done. So this afternoon, I believe I'll be playing with an old PC, putting Flex on it. Google has Chrome OS Flex, which is, for those of you who remember Cloud Ready, and Neverware, Google bought Neverware and has turned Cloud Ready into Flex, Chrome OS Flex, to be as precise as possible. And it's the newest version of the Chrome OS for non-Chromebooks. Although apparently many people are saying they've installed it on old Chromebooks. Chromebooks that are out of they're past end of life.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't, excuse me. I don't even remember eating that. You can't put the new version of the Chrome OS on it, but you can put Flex on it.
Okay.
Right? Because they reach end of life. You can't upgrade them. So as long as they have 4 gig of RAM, they should work just fine. And I'm going to try it on a 2 gig machine, see what happens. Will it run slowly or will it not even install?
You don't have another machine to put it in?
I have several, but I haven't done it yet. I got Flex yesterday.
Oh, okay.
I finally got to download it yesterday. This weekend I'll be playing with it. We'll see what happens. But I'm very much looking forward to that. Again, that's the exploring part. To me, that's the fun. Mm-hmm. I don't play a lot of games. I don't do any of that stuff. I like playing with new stuff on my computer. That's my fun.
Yeah, different toys and apps and everything else. See if you can get them to work and how well they will work.
Yeah,
like I say, that's why I get all excited. You know, with the now to get my other Raspberry Pi in, so I can get Ubuntu on it and start playing around with that, because there's so many programs I've already downloaded. I've got it on a separate drive that they claim they will run on Ubuntu. So
before you use them, check to see if they're already in the distribution.
Yeah.
So many of those programs, you can just say sudo apt install, whatever the name is.
Okay.
And that's a lot easier than moving it over and running the installer and blah, 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 blah.
Oh.
So yeah, take a look. Take a look through. There's
Yeah, because a lot of them, at least, I'd say 6 of them, like I say, are already designed to multi-platform. Right.
So they may well already be in the distribution, and then
could be. Yeah, I have to check. Yeah,
and then they'll automatically update and blah 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 blah.
Yeah, so that is the sweet part. Because like right now with the PC, when there's an update, I get a reminder. Oh, there's a newer version. It'd be nice if it just could set it up to automatically do the update in the background.
Right. I guess one of the people that I keep in touch with said, my vendor is telling me it'll take 8 hours to update my operating system. So I called the vendor and I said, it's going to take you 8 hours to type sudo apt update, sudo apt upgrade, sudo reboot. That's going to take you 8 hours? Well, no.
No.
No. It is not going to take you 8 hours. It's going to take you 14 minutes.
But we can't bill for 14 minutes.
That's exactly right. So bill for 1 hour. Fine.
Yeah.
I get that. But not eight.
What a con.
Oh, yeah. Oh, a lot of people are doing that. A lot of people are doing that. Look, I'm not saying that that's always going to happen. If you're running some special packages that need to be tested, et cetera, I get
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but
if
how
you had
would
20
they...
computers in the office that all needed to be updated.
Right, or 20 computers that all needed to be updated.
And you can't take them down at once. I've got a customer like that. Right. They've got 20 computers. I can only do one at a time.
Right, that's fair.
I can't even do two or three at a time. I can only do one at a time.
And that's absolutely fair. That's going to take you as long as it's going to take you. Yeah. This guy's got one machine.
But that's per machine, though. I mean, you're only taking one down at a time.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and it depends on how fast and how big the installation is and how fast it downloads from, you know, I mean, there's just a lot of that. I get all of that. I do. But the reality is that it's not 8 hours. It's just never going to be 8 hours. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. Give us a call, 585-966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. It's Sound Bites on the truly great, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Paul from West Irondequoit, New York, on the line. Hiya, Paul. What's up?
Hi, guys. Is my speakerphone okay?
We would prefer not.
Yeah, no. Please turn it off.
Okay, I turned it off.
There you go. Thanks.
Okay, good. Internet download speed, Spectrum.
Yeah.
Ethernet cable 5E type. I had a Spectrum technician over last Saturday. He's getting 250 megabytes coming into my house, going into my modem, coming out of my modem via cable. But when it goes into my old Dell computer, I'm getting like 113 at best. You know, sometimes 125, 113, sometimes 60. It's a Dell 3252. I bought it in July 2016, Intel Celeron CPU N3050, 1.6 gigahertz, 4 gigabytes of RAM.
Go ahead.
I would say it's a relatively slow processor.
Mm-hmm. Low memory.
And you got to check the Ethernet controller, see if it's 100 megabit or 1,000 megabit.
Right. See, there's the processor... In the Celeron, the processor in the Dell has something to do with how fast you can process what comes in, but the actual Ethernet card itself determines the maximum speed you can get data at. So if you've got a 250 megabyte download, but your internal card in your Dell is only 100 megabit, then you're never going to get much more than 100 megabit.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Would that be the Realtek PCIe GBE controller?
No, it should say your net. If you go into Device Manager, look under the Device Manager networking, and it'll list your network card. And it'll tell you, should tell you whether it's, a 10-100 or a 100/1000.
Okay, I will look again when I get off the line. I did some changes the other day. Looked for auto detect, and I also changed it to 1,000 gigabytes. You know.
Yeah, but I'm thinking,
None of that will matter if you've only got a 100 megabit card.
Yeah, you could be all dressed up and no place to go because you know it can only push it out. You could push it up to 2,000 if there is such a thing. And it's still only going to go as fast as that card can.
Right.
Okay. I should look for Ethernet card. Is that correct?
Yeah, it'll be under in your device manager. Like I say, if you go in the control panel, go under networking, and you'll see under the device managers, you'll see networking, and it'll list your network card.
Okay.
And it'll tell you, if you click on it, right click on it, it'll tell you all the information about it, what type of card it is, whether it's a 10-100 or a 100/1000.
Okay. And
you also may want to try a different Ethernet card, just to be safe. Ethernet cable.
Right.
Just to be safe. If you can put a new Ethernet card in it, that could speed
things
up.
It's a desktop. It's a tower.
There might be a slot.
So there might be a slot.
Should be.
The other thing, I'm not sure how to do it under Windows, but changing wireless versus Ethernet priority. Maybe he's only connecting via a slower Wi-Fi connection, and Ethernet isn't top priority.
Okay. We changed the Wi-Fi unit last week as well.
Yeah.
I've tried different cables, you know, going directly into the PC, et cetera.
You know. All right, so what you need to do is first check to see how fast your card is.
I think
it's only 100 megabits per second, you're kind of done.
Because that's why he's only getting speeds right now of 100.
Right, right. Maybe a little more than 100 because you'll get a little slop in there one way or the other. Yeah. If it is a gigabit Ethernet port, then as Steve said, try turning off Wi-Fi. And see if you get a faster connection through the Ethernet cable. Those two things, there's not much you can do. And I'm suspecting that that's an old enough machine that you have a 10-100 card, not a gigabit card.
Or it might not even be that good of a gigabit card if it is.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, I'm running airplane mode right now on my desktop.
Yeah, okay. Then it's definitely not using the Wi-Fi, so that part is done. But yeah, I would say I'm trying to look through their specifications here, and there's just a lot of them, and I'm not finding it. But the idea is that you probably have, there we go, audio, no, that's communications, wireless, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth. It says it's a gigabit controller.
Yeah, it could be gigabit, but is it?
Is it a good gigabit controller?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And only a 1.4 processor with Windows running on the overhead, it just may not
only
be able to process
that. 4 gig of memory.
Fast.
Yeah. You may be moving it as fast as that machine will take.
Would I go up to 8 gigabytes of memory? Would that help anything?
Not by much. Mm-hmm. The real problem is you've got a fairly slow processor.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
that's where your bottleneck is.
That's where the bottleneck is. Adding more RAM in some circumstances will be good, not in this one.
Okay. Well, thank you. I am a supporter.
Thank you.
And the funny thing, before I could make this call, I had to power down my modem and hook it up again because the Spectrum Digital phone went blank.
Oh, well, there you are.
All right. Thank you all.
All right. Thanks.
You may want to check the Dell website to see if there's been any driver updates. Maybe they have a better driver.
Good point. Good point. Dell has a
he can put in his service tag number, and it'll go right to his machine.
Yep.
And list any new updated drivers or anything else, whether it be for a sound card, his motherboard, network drivers, video drivers, the whole nine yards.
Right. That's one of the nice things about Dell. You put
they
in that
very
number
good about
and
that.
You
yeah.
get stuff. I don't avail myself much of that feature because although I have a Dell desktop, it's running Linux, so none of those drivers are really going to help me any. But it does give me an easy place to look up stuff.
But going back to that story though about the operating system and that, I think that's going to cost folks. You know, like I say. Right now, especially in these times with all these prices going up and everything else, to also now tell folks, oh, well, yeah, you got to go get a new machine. Yeah, no.
That's, that's why I think one of the reasons that although it's in beta, Google has put out Flex now.
Yeah.
Because people have a lot of old machines that are just sitting around. They can't put the new Windows on it. They're afraid of Linux. This gives them an intermediary, simple, easy thing to do. And I also think that the Linux folks have a definite window of opportunity, if I may make the pun here, that will give them the opportunity to say, look, you can't run Windows on this machine, or if you do, it's going to be horrible. Why not try Linux? Why not? Well, then yes, you can buy a new machine, but the whole point is they don't want to buy a new machine.
Yeah.
And they can't afford to buy a new machine.
And of course, that's
Let me finish. Oh, yeah. You can dual boot. You can dual boot Linux, so you don't have to get rid of your Windows.
Yep.
You can boot from a USB drive, but that will be very, very slow. Or you can set it up to dual boot, and they'll both run from the hard drive and be faster. But either way you do it, you get the opportunity to say, I can't run Windows efficiently or safely because you won't be getting any security updates. So let's try something different that will give me what I need. Sorry.
And then, no. Going back to like you were saying, though, with these older machines, now is the time before you get really desperate. You know, take that old machine and, you know, granted it's not going to be the trailblazer, you know, playing, you know, the video games and all that other stuff, but you're using it as a tool to learn. Remember when you first started with Windows? You were trying to, you know, look through all the menus and see what this did and what that did. Well, that's basically what you would do now with Linux. Is the way they set it up that you can have it look and feel like Windows.
Yeah, if you use
menus at the top and icons on the desktop, it's 90% the same.
90% the same.
And yeah, so you can sit around and again play with it because it's not on your main machine. It can be off on this other machine. And do like you did when you first started out with Windows. Do a little experiment. Oh, let's see what this does. You know, opening up this window and get comfortable with it. And you can do it at a comfortable speed, not all of a sudden, oh, I got to learn this operating system. Right. I'm doomed.
Right. Zorin OS right now is pretty much designed for Windows users. It's doing a pretty good job of emulating the Windows look. So if you were to put Zorin on your machine, it would look very much like very much like Windows. React OS is another one. Elementary OS is another one. Kubuntu a little bit. Linux Mint is another one. So there are some Windows like operating systems. Now obviously you're not going to run Windows programs on most of them. If you've got 8 or 16 gig of RAM and blah, 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 you can do a lot of that with Wine. But in general, you know, instead of running Office, you run LibreOffice. Instead of Microsoft Office, you run LibreOffice. Instead of Photoshop, you run the GIMP and, you know, blah, 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 blah. So if you're a longtime Photoshop user, the GIMP is going to be hard for you. But if you're the sort of person who uses it mainly to get rid of Red Eye, it's going to be pretty easy. So that's not so bad.
You can do that on your phone these days.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
In fact, the phone probably does it automatically when it takes the picture.
It can, absolutely. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Joe. What's up?
Hello, guys. Happy Saturday.
And to you, too.
Thanks. I'd like to know, with all the stuff that's going on with Russia and Ukraine, and they talk about the cyber attacks.
Yeah.
Like, is there anything the average person should do or could do or should be worried about at all?
Maybe. Generally, they're not hitting individuals at this point. They're hitting hubs like the domain name servers and all of that stuff.
And businesses.
But one of the things that you as an individual can do, if you're running your own router, most routers have a blacklist. That is to say, you can go in and say, I don't want to get anything from a domain that ends in .ru, which is Russia, or whatever Ukraine is, or, you know, that sort of thing. So you can block those right at the source, and they'll never even reach your machine.
Okay. Now, can they spoof, though, like phones do?
Yes,
like,
and I was about to say, that's only going to mitigate some of it. What you can do, and I haven't seen a definitive list recently, but you can also block IP ranges. So you would, you know, maybe, why don't I look that up while we're talking?
That's getting to be less useful as IPs are being sold off. It used to be IPs were sold geographically, and so it was easy to block an IP range. But now with the IP exhaustion, it's IPs are all over the place now.
Right. And there are 7,200 address blocks assigned to the Russian Federation. So putting all of them in might be a little bit tedious.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a few you could do, but really the best thing to do is to pretty much leave it to the professionals and let them handle it. But again, if right. You know, I used to get an awful lot of email from Russian addresses. Just spam, mostly spam.
Yeah, the ransomware, Reval Gang,
right.
Was mostly Russia and pretty sure backed by the Russian government.
Yeah, exactly. So I blocked those and that went, and the, you know, getting those spam messages went way down.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, those are some of the things you can do.
And as far as like bank accounts too, like bank accounts are pretty much out of our control. I mean,
right. You know, they're going to hit the bank, not you.
Right. Okay.
Mostly for something like that. Obviously there are people who will try to get into your system to steal your stuff and you still have to protect against right. that. But when you're talking about cyber terrorism and all of that, they're going to hit the big institutions.
Gotcha. Okay. All right, guys. Thanks. Have a good day.
Thank you. Bye. Coincidentally, last night for the second time in the, 7 years I've had it, green light went down. And I really thought at first, is this a cyber attack?
We've been getting stalls on YouTube TV since we're doing more on the internet now.
Right.
Watching something on YouTube TV and we get the buffering icon.
That's coming from the YouTube. Yeah, the YouTube is being hit all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. But this was the
actual,
first
at your end or the green light end.
This was green light in our neighborhood. This is the second time this has happened in all these years. The first time they were digging up the street and took out the cable, the underground cable. Pretty much that's not green light's fault.
Yep.
And they had it fixed pretty quickly. This was I don't know what this was yet, but they got that fixed pretty quickly as well. So, but there was a moment where I thought, was this some sort of cyber attack? Mm-hmm. Because the symptom was I couldn't get to DNS. So if they had hit the DNS servers, mm-hmm. that would make sense.
Yep.
But I couldn't get to any of them, including the one at RIT.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured pretty, and then I turned on the news. I still have Spectrum cable, so I had a source of information. And nobody was saying anything about anything like that, so I assumed it was local, and indeed it was.
I just ran into something horrible. So several months ago, I switched to Greenlight,
mm-hmm.
turned in my cable box at the store, the actual cable store, and thought I canceled my service.
Yeah.
I started getting dunning letters saying you haven't paid for your service.
Interesting.
I thought I canceled that 3 months ago. So I called the phone number, and it says, oh, no, you have to call us to cancel your service.
Oh, good to know.
Then why did the guy at the store say you're all set, everything's canceled?
Yeah.
They tried to, customer retention, why are you switching? Green light. Oh, okay.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
They know they can't compete with it. Right. But I took the equipment to the store. I can't receive Time Warner services right. anymore. I have no equipment. And you won't cancel my service unless I go to somebody else and say cancel my service?
Really? Yeah. Especially since they're checking the box in and they got to match that box number right. with your account and mark it return.
Yeah, they know it was my last box. And I said, I'm canceling my service. And he said, okay. And I have a receipt. Well, it doesn't matter, apparently.
Apparently not.
So now I got to see if they're going to leave this 3 months of service on my bill that I couldn't use the service and I'm not paying for it. What's going to happen now? Are they going to?
Well, you'll keep us informed.
Yes.
Yeah.
In the meantime, we'll go to Tom from Greece, New York. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
How you doing, guys?
Good. How are you?
All righty. I got a problem. I got a few Mac Pros, and I was using them for Bitcoins when the Bitcoins first started until I got my electric bill.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I just stopped using them. But what I want to do is I need the command to wipe them clean. I know option P, you can install the operating system, but what I want to do is format them and reinstall the operating system.
Yeah, Command R will boot into the recovery volume.
That's what it is.
And then you
Command
can
R.
Yep, and you can go into Disk Utility, erase the drive, and then reload the a new operating system.
That's the one, Command R. I forgot it. Yeah, thank you very much.
Sure. Absolutely. Good luck, Tom.
All righty. Bye bye.
And what's kind of neat is that even works if there's no OS on your drive. It actually boots the OS over the internet.
Yep, nice.
They started this like 10 years ago when people never had their disks. So, you know, my system's corrupt. I need to reinstall. I need your disks. Well, I don't have those anymore. I threw them out with the box 5 years ago.
All right.
So we started keeping all the disks. In fact, we have these giant binders full of CDs at the time, and then we started making hard drive images. But then we were really happy. About the time they stopped including CD drives on computers, they included a flash drive with the OS in the box for a couple of years, and then they even stopped doing that when now we have internet booting.
Right.
So if your computer is completely hosed, it won't boot anything, they're an empty hard drive or brand new hard drive, you can still boot over the internet and install an OS.
You can do that now with Raspberry Pis, by the way.
Oh, yeah?
Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. But, yeah, Tom has found out something that most people don't take into consideration.
Yep.
You will spend more money on electricity than you will make in Bitcoin. Absolutely. So I have discovered, however, if you mine, most of them require a lot of GPU power, which is where your electricity goes. Monero does not, and you can even do it on a Raspberry Pi. And if you mine Monero on a Raspberry Pi, your average loss is only a penny a day.
But you don't have
not bad.
You don't have to heat your house, so there's that savings.
There's that savings. You're going to buy a new computer every few years because you're going to burn it out.
Yep.
But and a friend of mine is doing that. He's mining Monero on his Raspberry Pi. And I said to him, you got a 4B with 8 gig. And I said, how's it going? He said, well, I haven't made any money yet. I said, how much have you lost? He said, about a dollar. I said, well, that's not bad. He said, look, this is my hobby. I don't expect to ever make any money on it. People spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on their hobby. I spend a penny a day. Okay. That's fair. But you know you're losing money. He says, yeah, I know it. It's my hobby. That's all.
Well,
yeah. Your hobby.
It's like the stock market. Don't put money in there unless you know you're going
to
lose it.
Unless you're willing to lose it.
But
yeah,
now,
absolutely.
Now I'm thinking we should maybe invest in some Defense Department, agency stocks.
Yeah, right.
Because they're the only people that make money in a war.
That's exactly right. But yeah, there's just not the reality is that there's look, I've talked about this before. As with any Ponzi scheme, if you were in first, you're going to make money. You're not first anymore.
Yeah, what's that? 99% of the Bitcoin are owned by 10% of the people?
85 to 90% of all Bitcoin are owned by the person who started the Bitcoin. So if I told you this a couple of weeks ago, I put out Nickcoin. And I keep a million of them, and I only put out 100,000 for everybody else. And then I cash out my million. The stock crashes. That's called rug pulling. And you lose all your money. What did I have? Dead Pirates.
Dead Pirates, yeah.
Instead of Dread Pirates.
The mapping.
You've still got your Dread. Oh, no, that was the NFTs.
That was NFTs.
Yeah, it's the mapping.
Similar
thing. You say the map.
Right. That's
picture of a map.
You bought a treasure map, not a treasure.
Right.
But this is Bitcoin, and the fact is that only about, as I said, anywhere between 10 to 15% of the total number of Bitcoins are actually out for sale. This is true of every Bitcoin. If you follow the blockchain, which you can do, there are utilities that let you do that, you will see that that is true for every single Bitcoin. So somebody's out there hoarding that Bitcoin and just waiting for the right moment to cash in 90% of the available Bitcoin.
Ouch.
That can't be good for everybody else who's got one.
It's down to 39,000 from a high of almost 70 6 months ago.
Bitcoin itself?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Bitcoin is the worst one to invest in, right?
Yeah, yeah. Right now, it certainly is. It's going to be very difficult to get a new Bitcoin.
It's like any other Ponzi scheme. You get in at the top.
If it's your hobby, God bless you.
Yeah. Well, especially if you're running it like a Raspberry Pi where you're only losing a penny a day.
Yeah.
that's like you said, that's fun. But like this guy was saying just now that, you know, he had these three machines mining and got his electric bill, and it's like, whoa!
Yeah, it ain't free money. And we live in an area where electricity is cheaper than in some other areas.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's something you really, I'm sorry, but it's not, there is no get-rich-quick scheme, and certainly Bitcoin isn't it.
There's that power company in up in the Adirondack somewhere that's using their excess power
right
to mine for Bitcoins.
Right. I have a friend who's got a solar array in his yard. And I said, you know, you can mine Bitcoin. He said, I can barely get this array is enough for my house. It's not going to be enough to do anything else at this point. All right. What just happened here? Okay, we're done for first hour. I pushed the wrong button. We're done for the first hour. But don't go away because we'll be back. We've got a whole lot more of Dave Enright, way too much of Steve Ray, not nearly enough of Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. I have no idea how much longer I have to talk. 25 seconds. All right, then I will tell you that we are Sound Bites, the longest running computer show in the known universe, right here in the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member supported Jazz 90.1. We'll see you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Sound Bites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Oof. I got gas, too.
I don't know where it's coming from.
Maybe the donuts. Donuts. Yeah.
Maybe the donuts. I was looking at RPi Locator today, rpilocator.com. And there are Raspberry Pis available in Germany and China and UK. But that's it. But that's currently it right at the moment.
In a container somewhere, right?
Yeah, they're saying now, like, if you want, say, either the 4 or the 8 gig kit from Canakit, you've got to wait until April. April 15th. I've got mine coming in
March 15th.
No, right now, if you look at from Canakit, I'm looking right here at their website. If you want either a Raspberry Pi 4, 8 gig or 4 gig, it's a wait time of April 15th.
Yeah, but yours, you want sooner, should be here around the 15th of March.
Yeah. Mine should be here within a few weeks. Yeah,
I did not order one, and I should have, and so now I'll wait till April, I guess. But
I was doing it on the assumption you were doing it, so I thought, I got to do it.
I should have done it. I still had a 3 that I was sitting around unused, and I thought, why would I buy something else when I got this? So I set it up, and now I don't have a waiting one, so I better get one.
Well, see, I had a 3, an extra 3. Like you, and it was sitting around, can't justify. And then all of a sudden, my other 3B poofed up.
Yeah.
Went poof. And I thought,
that's a technical term, ladies and gentlemen. We're professionals.
So I was able to just quick, and this was the beauty of it. I was able to just go downstairs, because that's where I have three of them in the basement, different points of the house, and just take out the memory card, put it in this other Raspberry Pi, hook everything up, boot it up, waited a few minutes, back up and running.
Yep, up you go. You're done.
Nothing. It was
done. No, absolutely. I absolutely get it.
Oh, the other thing I had to do was take my backup chip, you know, because I've got an extra one that I made a copy of, and just take untape that from there, put it over this one. Yeah. All right.
You're done.
That was one of my first original Raspberry Pi 3Bs, so it owed me nothing. I paid, what, $45 for it, I think?
Yeah. The one that I'm using is my old, the one I just set up is my oldest one. And so I finally set that up. So now I could go buy one. But like I said, when I get home tonight, I'll play with Flex. I'll set up an old computer with Flex on it. We'll see. And you can give us a call, by the way, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And we will be more than delighted, if not actually thrilled, to put you on the line and talk to you. And it'll be joyous and thrilling. And you'll get your Andy Warhol 15 minutes of fame. Probably less than that. We probably don't want to talk to anybody for 15 minutes. Sorry, didn't need to.
I was
going to
say five minutes.
Right. And let's give Dan from Webster, New York, his time. What's up, Dan?
Hey, good morning, Nick.
It is that.
Another question about the Russian invasion. You've got an antivirus port called Kaspersky.
Right.
Now, I'm not using it, but I know there are a bunch of people that do.
Yep.
Is it safe to continue?
Well, I'll tell you what. Lots and lots of people have asked that question, and lots of people have torn apart the code in Kaspersky, and every one of them has said that it is safe to use. However, that doesn't include all of the updates that you get downloaded.
Bingo.
So it might not be the best choice for the moment. It is a really, really good antivirus program. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is really, really good.
And they do a lot of research on new viruses too, because they have so many people using their product. They tend to catch a lot of new viruses,
right? But they, you know, there are always rumors they're in Putin's pocket, blah, 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 blah. But none of them have ever been proved. And just because they're Russian doesn't necessarily make them a problem. But, you know, you got to go with your own conscience. I also don't use it.
And there are similar stories that Symantec is run by the NSA. And so they do the same thing at our hand.
Right, right. So I don't use either of those products. But
damned if you do and damned if you don't.
That's exactly right. But, you know, the short answer is nobody knows.
But if you didn't write it yourself, you can't trust it.
That's right.
Ultimately.
It's what you feel comfortable with and can live with.
Sorry.
Okay, good answer.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. Yeah, it's hard to give any sort of definitive answer.
Yeah, because we can't make that judgment because, you know, our comfort level might be totally different than other folks because of our backgrounds in handling stuff and that and what we might do as far as due diligence on where we go on the web and what we do as far as keeping our machines protected and backing up and everything else. And the passwords, you know, there's a lot to it, folks.
Yeah, and there is.
That's why we've been doing it for over 31 years.
We've been at this a long time.
Mm-hmm.
A long, long time. All right. Well, you give
us... Over 100 years of experience between us.
Between us. Among us.
Yeah.
All right. This is an interesting story, actually. And by the way, while I'm telling the story, you can give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Apple is preparing to make a major change to the Face ID repair process in iPhone 12 and newer. This change will allow Apple stores and Apple authorized service providers to repair Face ID without having to replace the entire iPhone itself. Apple announced that they used to have to change. You had to send in your whole iPhone?
It was the whole display. For the front cameras and then the whole iPhone for the rear cameras. this has been ongoing where they keep adding more and more parts that we can replace without doing the whole phone.
Right. Apple announced this change in an internal memo to employees. The company is giving authorized service technicians access to a new true depth camera service part that consists of the Face ID and front camera modules. With this part, service providers will be able to perform same unit repairs for Face ID issues. This means that if the Face ID module in your iPhone XS or newer fails, notice it's iPhone XS or newer.
That's when they started with Face
right,
ID.
Right. But if Face ID doesn't work on one of your older iPhones because it doesn't have it, Apple stores and Apple authorized service providers can now replace just that module without having to replace your entire iPhone. This is a major change as previously Face ID module failures required a whole device replacement. This change comes after Apple last year announced it would be able to repair the rear glass of select iPhone 12 models without having to replace the entire device. From an environmental standpoint, the ability to make a more modular approach to repairs means Apple is producing far less waste than when it has to replace an entire device because of a single failure part, a part failure. It also means that users don't lose any data or even have to bother with setting up a new iPhone just because of a single failure, although you should still back up your iPhone. There's no word on when exactly this new Face ID repair process will be implemented at Apple stores and Apple authorized service providers. The company is currently telling technicians that the documentation and training for this process will be made available at a later date. So don't go rushing to your authorized Apple dealer demanding this fix just yet. They don't have it. Are you having trouble with Face ID? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
And the irony is that Face ID started getting popular about the time we had to start wearing masks.
Yeah, right.
But some of it is the speed of repair, too. That if we can order a new phone and you get your phone fixed tomorrow by getting a new phone, that's great.
Yeah, it is.
And then the old phones go back to Apple where they get disassembled and the working parts get put back into the repair chain. So they have more time to take things. So they have robots to take things apart.
Right.
Liam and Daisy. They have names. Oh.
Of course they do.
So they have robots to take the phones apart to be able to recycle the components, and working components can get reused. So it's always that trade-off between speed of repair and complexity of repair.
Right.
The easiest repair is replace the whole thing.
Right.
And if you can go in and replace certain components, then that's a more complex repair. But a little harder for the technician.
But also better for the user in the sense that you should still back up your phone, but it's easier to back up your phone and not need it than to have to reinstall everything on a new phone.
And the first troubleshooting step we're supposed to follow, and in fact, the customer is supposed to do it before they bring it to us because they call Apple for help, and erase your phone and install a clean OS and see if the problem occurs.
No. Step one is always back up.
Yeah.
Step one is always back up. Let me repeat that. Yep. Step one is always back up.
So many people have said they told me to erase my phone, and now where's all my data?
Mm-hmm.
Wherever you backed it up. Well, no, they didn't tell me to do that.
Right.
Yep.
Don't wait for them to tell you because they won't. Mm-mm. Step one is always back up. All right. We're going to go back to the phones. Our next caller is Josh from Fairport, New York. Hiya, Josh. What's up?
Hey, fellas. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just had a question about the metaverse. I was reading an article last night about how, you know, young kids are easily gaining access to very inappropriate content.
Yep.
And I was just wondering, like, if there is a group or an individual who would ever take on, you know, the task of kind of making that a lot harder for kids to get to.
Well, they've made it very difficult. You have to say you're of age.
Mm-hmm.
And we know children never lie.
Exactly.
Trademark Facebook.
The metaverse has been used in science fiction for centuries.
So it's a Facebook product, and we all know that Facebook couldn't care less.
Right.
Nobody is policing the metaverse at the moment. It was the same. And for those of you who don't know what the metaverse is, if you've ever used Second Life or any one of a thousand other things like it, mine Minecraft.
Minecraft, Roblox.
Roblox, all of those things are basically...
virtual environment.
They're virtual environments, and that's what the metaverse is. Just a, it's a old oil and new lamps, and it's not a new thing at all. There's... basically, you get online. Of course, it is different. You have to buy a $400 headset at a minimum before you can get into the metaverse.
Right.
Whereas it used to be you just downloaded a client in order to get into Second Life or any one of the others. But no, now it costs you a lot of money to get into the metaverse. But and I suppose people think that that's some sort of deterrent to young folks. It is not.
No.
But at any rate, you get in there and you basically, walk around in a virtual environment and interact with people. And the very first thing that happened, of course, was reporters got in. And if they were female reporters, they started being groped.
Right.
By people. And so now there are apparently some blocks in place that you can't grope other people without their consent, I guess. But the metaverse is like anything else.
The jerks always ruin it for the rest of us.
The jerks ruin it, and it's pretty much wide open, as is everything else.
That's a polite way of saying it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you don't want your kids in the metaverse, don't buy them an Oculus headset.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. The best way to avoid it is to, remove yourself from even the possibility of encountering.
One of the big things we used to say, but it's getting harder these days, is don't put the computer in the kid's bedroom. Leave it out right. in the living room where everyone is, and the kids are less likely to go to somewhere naughty.
I started to say that about 25 years ago.
Yeah, now when they have their own phones and tablets, it's
hard to do.
Hard to do, yeah.
Absolutely.
Again, you can if you are running your own router, you can block the IP addresses.
Yeah, and schedule their time that they're allowed to gain access to.
Do all kinds of things with that. But
oh, yeah. Maybe set up some sort of a remote kind of in-between so you can kind of survey what they're doing kind of in real time.
Right.
All right. Well, thanks so much, guys.
Yeah, sorry. Thanks.
Oh, yeah. Take care.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I think the cheapest Oculus set is $300, I think. So, I don't know. It's it just doesn't impress me. But then, I'm not, as I've said many times, I'm not a game player, and I have real friends. So we used to love Second Life. It got us in touch with a lot of great people. But now we can do that face-to-face through, in our case, we use Mastermind Lounge on Sunday nights. Don't forget, you can join us. It's every Sunday night from 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. If you go to soundbites.org/lounge, at 9 p.m., you'll see a link. If you refresh at 9 p.m., you'll see a link that will let you in to the chat, and we'll all be there from 9 to 10, just chatting about whatever the heck we feel like. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is James from Rochester, New York. Hi, James. What's up?
Yes, I called you once before about my Windows security on my Acer inexpensive laptop. When I open the where it says Windows security protection areas, and everything has a green check mark, and it says no actions needed on virus protection, firewall.
Right.
And browser control. But I keep getting these pop-up windows on the lower right that says I need virus protection from McAfee. Do I need that?
It is. When you go in and see all the green check marks, is that Windows Defender?
I don't know.
Okay, you should pay attention to the whole window because it'll have a title on it somewhere.
It just says Windows Security.
Okay, that is, and again, how do you get to that?
Just clicking on the security page, like Windows Update.
If it's from the Windows Update page, it's Windows Defender.
Right. And do you pay yearly for the have you paid for McAfee?
No.
All right, then
it
probably
sounds like it's just an ad.
Yeah, it sounds like it was an ad, or possibly it was pre-installed and you didn't fully get rid of it. And you might want to go into Revo Uninstaller and see if it's still remnants there and uninstall McAfee.
Okay, because, like, yeah, when I, okay, I open up the Windows security page on the settings, and that's when it shows everything's okay, all the green check marks, no action needed. Then I'll check the Revo, and if it's on there, I'll get rid of it.
And it, there's also a possibility that it's an ad coming from the Windows Advertisement Service.
Yep.
And I've posted a link on how to disable Windows advertising.
McAfee does have a personal security 2.0 something that comes on many Windows 10S machines, and that's what you have.
Yes.
So it is possible that you have that. Now, what you want to do is, if you're not going to pay for McAfee, you can uninstall it, but you should have something, and one of the things you can have is Windows Defender. So after you uninstall McAfee, make sure you're running Windows Defender. If you're not, you can download it from the Windows Store.
Yeah. Does my laptop come with Defender, a cheap Acer?
It might, but if it doesn't, because you're running S, you can install it from the
store. So you recommend the Windows Defender for me?
Yes.
Okay. I will have to check that. And did you say you posted something on the Soundbites website about, would you say, to uninstall or virus? Or
disabling Windows advertisements.
Yes. I should check that. Is that first on today's?
Yeah, that's up already for today.
Okay, I'll check that right now. Disable advertising.
It's, I think, the third thing down. Yeah, it's right there. It's the third thing down on the list. And do that first, because that may solve your problem immediately.
Okay, yeah. I didn't add anything to this laptop when I bought it about a year ago.
All right, so do that first.
Okay, that sounds good. Thank you so much again.
Yep, good luck.
Okay.
Yeah, the thing about any of these machines is many of them come with bloatware, we call it, extra programs that the company pays Acer or HP or whoever to install on their systems, which theoretically is supposed to lower the price for you. Doesn't.
It raises the profit for the
computer company.
Doesn't lower the
price. Believe me, they're not passing that on to you. But the idea is that they get more money for that, and you can go hang. Nobody cares about what you feel. All right, so back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hiya, Mark, what's up?
Hey, the gentleman that just called.
Yeah.
I recently started using Avast again. I was using Komodo, but I called you a while ago, I was having scan problems with it, and so I decided to, get rid of that, and I went to Avast again, and boy, oh boy, have they improved that program.
Excellent.
Even now, with a basic firewall you can get in the free program.
Nice.
So, and what I did is I got it out of the Windows store. So, it's going to make sure that it's updated all the time.
Right.
And it'll work on S because it's from the Windows Store.
Right.
So,
good thought.
I just wanted to call and say, that'll do them good.
Excellent. Thank you, Mark.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
And James, I know you're still listening, so you can also take a look at Avast instead of Windows Defender. But whichever one is, if Defender is already on your machine, you might as well continue using it. If you don't have one, take a look at Avast as well.
And there's something to be said, because it comes from Microsoft, it's already hooked into the kernel.
Right.
It doesn't have to add external hooks.
Right, but it doesn't get updated quite as often because it only updates one Windows update.
Yeah, and that's...
Yeah, they put out emergency updates when they need to.
Yeah. When they're pretty much forced into it, yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so... There are a lot of options even for Windows S users. All right. We are going to take a quick break. We will be back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites right here in the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll see you on the other side.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. One, turn your radio down. Two, turn your radio down lower. Three, remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. Four, make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. Five, calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. Six, if you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And seven, is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hi, this is Jake Longwell, hoping you can stay up late for an hour of the best in classic and contemporary jazz. It's the Jazz Scene. Sunday mornings at 1 a.m. on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
He's got to do that on purpose.
I was going to say, jazz music with a polka theme?
He's doing it on purpose. Once the drugs kick in, he has no control.
He's sick.
All right.
It's all the fumes from putting in the new carpet out there.
That's exactly it.
And they did his office, so he was sitting in there,
right,
inhaling all those fumes.
And so the radon.
Yeah, it was a solvent from getting rid of the old carpet, and then the glue from the new carpet. Yeah.
He wanted to ride the Zamboni. That's
they had
what.
A little mini Zamboni in there. It was very
yeah,
cool.
I saw that. That was cool for lifting up. As you wouldn't know, folks, but we wound up getting new carpeting in here, and it's nice.
Yeah. All right, we're back, everybody, hurtling into the end of the show. It's the last half hour. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And in the meantime, I will. Oh, you know what? I'm going to read this one instead. It's short, but it's pithy.
Piffy.
Tracking tags have blown up in popularity since Apple introduced its AirTags last year. The concept of the device is absurdly simple. Strap it onto something you don't want to lose, and through a combination of local tracking and crowdsourcing via the help of nearby iPhones, apparently whether you like it or not, on Apple's Find My network, you should never misplace it again. But Apple is very aware that AirTags can have other shady uses and is now taking steps to stop it, or at least politely advise users not to do illegal things. As part of some anti-stalking changes Apple is making to AirTags in the iOS 15.4 beta, the company has added a setup warning that reminds you that you can locate your AirTag at any time, but using it to track people without their consent is a crime in many regions of the world. Misuse of AirTags, and because, you know, anybody who looks at that and says, oh my gosh, that's illegal, I better not do it. Misuse of AirTags or other tracking devices has become a problem as cases of exes stalking each other or even thieves putting devices in luxury vehicles have emerged in recent months. If you do stumble across a rogue AirTag, you should turn the back of it counterclockwise to take out the battery and disable it. Apple also has an Android app you can use to track nearby AirTags and disable them if needed. You should check for AirTags regularly. If you find one you're not expecting, disable it immediately. If you found an AirTag you weren't expecting, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
That'd be cool to put on your pets.
Yep.
Well, and people are doing that.
Yeah.
I put one in my car, and if I walk too far away, in fact, I didn't get it, the warning. I won't get a warning that I left my Subaru behind.
Yeah.
I don't get it here, which is interesting. Yeah, but I get it at some other clients. The system was originally designed to warn you if an unknown AirTag is following you around, but it didn't warn you for several days. So Apple...
Apple that's timely.
Yeah, Apple reduced that warning to a couple hours, I think. Yeah. Because you might be with someone that has their own AirTag and following you around.
Right. There is a tracker. Now, iPhones do this automatically.
Yeah.
But Android phones do not. But there is a tracker app that you can run. Now, it's only active while you're running it. But it means that, you know, get in your car and run it. And see what it finds. If it finds nothing, you win. And if it does find something, then treat that as you would any other stalker. Carry a baseball bat.
There was an interesting court case a few years ago that relates to this. Police put a GPS tracker on a suspect and were able to track them to drug deals, basically. But the suspect's lawyer successfully argued that they violated his right to privacy because he had an enclosed garage. And so when he drove his car into his garage, they now had a surveillance device without a warrant in his personal property.
Oh, interesting.
And so they lost all data related to that. And the police were arguing, they said, well, we could have had someone following him. And they said, well, that's fine. You can pay someone to follow him and watch him go into his house. And so the police were trying to say that we were just trying to save money by using this tracker instead of having physically someone do it. So trackers have gotten smaller and smaller and smaller. You see them in movies all the time about, you know, putting that little tiny tracker in the back of the car. But
the little tiny tracker that has a red light and beeps.
Yeah.
Excuse me? Sorry, go ahead.
They don't do that.
They don't do that.
For real. But now... the trackers are getting small enough, and it is getting easier to use them to track stuff you've lost or missed behind, left behind. That's the big thing. You put one in your wallet, so when you go out to the car, it warns you left your wallet behind.
Right. But what warns you left your phone behind?
People never leave their phone behind.
That's true.
And I have a button on my watch that makes my phone beep.
There you go. But yeah, so. Check regularly. The serious issue here, we're kind of joking about this, but the serious issue is that many people are being stalked by abusive exes, just plain stalkers of all sorts. And, AirTags in particular, because they're cheap and the network is ubiquitous, are used often in this. So even if you have an Android phone, you can check regularly to see if you are tagged and deal with it. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon. So I've got a problem. My older laptop, I'm pretty sure it's got some malware or virus on it. And what I want to do is have it scan it sort of something like with, the tools that Nick has on his site, Security Tango. But I'd like to run it from another computer, like use my desktop to scan the laptop. Do I have to take the hard drive out of the laptop to do that, or can I do it right through the USB, perhaps on the laptop?
You can't go USB to USB, but theoretically, you could file share it, mount the laptop drive as an F drive on the desktop. But I don't know.
I haven't scanned
it as a network drive. It's the easiest thing.
Won't find any boot sectors.
Yeah, the easiest thing is to pull the hard drive out, or make all make a flash drive with the programs on a known good computer, so then you can boot it on the suspect computer.
Oh, use the flash drive on the suspect computer.
Mm-hmm.
I see. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's an approach. Okay, but you can't basically connect a laptop, whether it's turned on or off, to a desktop.
You can. There are limitations, however.
Yeah.
One problem, of course, is that when you mount that drive on your other desktop, if the program is well-written, if the virus is well-written and virulent enough, it'll now infect the other machine.
Yeah, it can infect the other machine, right. Okay, then the best thing is to do it offline, take the drive out or something like that.
Right,
okay.
Take the drive out and mount it as a second drive. That way, the virus never activates.
Or I would do it right now. You know, if it's an old machine and time isn't of a thing, run the programs right on that computer. Because if there's any boot sector viruses or that, it's not going to find them if you're adding it as an attached drive. Because when you start your machine up, you're booting off your original C. And you're, if you're going over, say, to the F drive and doing a scan on that, it'll look at the files and all that stuff, but it won't look at the boot sectors and all that.
It might not. And so the other thing you can do is create a Linux boot device and then use any of the Linux device antivirus programs, which do check for Windows viruses.
Run the Linux, the old laptop, you're saying, correct?
Well, mm-hmm. Then you would boot from the USB drive, and it would boot up as a Linux device. You create a bootable Linux.
Yes.
Okay. And then you boot, and then you put, like, clam on that one or whatever, and then you run it on the other machine, and now it sees the built-in hard drive as a second drive, and that's the one you scan.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Sounds like it'll work. I'll let you know how it works out.
Thanks. Please let us know. That would be great. Thanks. Thanks, Tom. Good luck.
Interestingly, Macs have this feature built in called Target Disk Mode. You hold the T key down while you're booting, and it turns your computer into a disk. And then you just plug it into another machine, and it thinks it's an external disk. Apparently, there hasn't been any call to do that on PCs.
No, apparently not. But now, again,
it's been there for 20 years. That's how you copy all the data from one computer to another.
Right. But again, does it activate that drive? If it does, then it could be running that infection.
Yeah, if there's a boot sector virus, it could do that.
Right.
The other computer just thinks, well, it does say it's a target disk. So it knows it's not a straight, you know, USB or FireWire disk. It started in the old FireWire days because FireWire has its own controller.
Right.
Which had other issues with direct memory access,
Days are gone now. So.
Yeah. So it's built into the Mac and nice. No one ever bothered for Windows. The closest thing would be like a Laplink cable.
Right.
Which is a little computer in the middle that reads everything from one drive to write it onto another drive to
right, but it doesn't access it in the way that Tom wants.
Yeah.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mary from Pittsford, New York. Hi, Mary. What's up?
Hi. Question for you. My husband was the one that took care of our computer and the internet security and so forth, and he passed away in the fall.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. And Kaspersky Internet Security came up for renewal in January, and I just let it renew. And I guess my question is, I think it's a Russian base,
yes,
or it used to be. Is that still safe, or should I get rid of it?
Okay. The thing about Kaspersky is that many people have torn apart the code, and they say it's safe.
And the developer happens to be Russian. He's claimed for years the Russian government has no involvement.
Right. And whether or not you believe him is up to you. But the many people have torn it apart and they have said it is a safe program. However, once it's installed on your computer, it gets updates. Are those updates also safe? Who knows?
But enough people are looking into it that if something does happen, it will make the news.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll report on it here second or third.
Second or third anyway, yeah. right now at least Kaspersky is deemed safe.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Yep, thank you. Again, that can change at any minute, but right now the major players are saying it's safe.
Yep.
And I'm willing to believe them. You know, we see a lot of stuff come down. We find as diligent as both Apple and Google are in their Play Stores.
One of the other stores.
Right. As diligent as they are in their Play Stores, stuff gets through. And they kill it pretty quickly, and that's great. But it is possible to get stuff.
It's hard to keep up with. It's hard to keep up. The millions of files that transfer, I should say billions of files that transfer over the internet in a given day would stagger the average person's mind.
And there's a program out now for Androids called Fast Cleaner. It's had over 50,000 installs, and Google finally saw that it is in fact a banking Trojan.
There's a lot of fake cleaners on Mac and Windows.
Yeah.
Some of them are just bad programming. Some of them are actually malicious.
Right. So Fast Cleaner is obviously piggybacking on the significantly more popular and legit and safe to use Fast Cleaner Booster and Cleaner. And Fast Cleaner and CPU Cooler, those are both real, but the one that's just called Fast Cleaner, and it was created by someone called Ilzeeva 4, ILZEEVA4, who's probably not the real developer anyway, and it's no longer in the Play Store. But if you are running that one, you should delete it immediately and check your machine for check your phone for any sort of virus. The reality is that these things get through. One of the reasons that Microsoft instituted the S mode, which is supposed to be security or simple in Windows, is that you can only install things from the Windows Store, which theoretically makes it safer, but they get hit too. As these guys said, you get so many thousands and thousands of programs inserted every day that it's often hard to keep up. And they get updated all the time. So it's not just, there's 150,000 programs. That's a lot to check to begin with. And then they're always getting updates, though, in those, so you've got actually millions of programs in the stores these days.
And the bad guys can do a time delay. So like right now, it is just a calculator. But in 6 months, it turns into something worse.
Right. And so there's a lot of that.
It knows when it's hooked up to the diagnostic computer and turns off all the emissions.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And so these things we see regularly. So you need to keep up to date with everything. As Mary and I think it was Dan said, we have a lot of people who are now worried about things like Kaspersky because it is from Russia. And indications right now, and I'm trying to be careful about this, indications right now are that it is clean. That can change at any moment. But right now, indications are that it is clean. It is also an exceptionally good program. It's close to 100% on every system that it's run on.
We can only base that upon the knowledge that we have at the moment.
Right.
And we can no way say that, tomorrow or who knows down the road that things could change. And that's why we're saying, again, it depends on your comfort level. If you're willing to, do with that and kind of watch the news and that and kind of watch out to make sure there's, no news article coming or hear us start talking about, you don't want to use that one, get it off, install something else. That's okay. But if it's really kind of gnawing at you, the back of your mind, well, then go ahead, uninstall that and go with McAfee. You could go with Norton. AVG is still good.
Avast.
I mean, I still use Avast. And that's a great one. I've used it for decades, and I've just stuck with it,
If it's for peace of mind, get rid of Kaspersky immediately. There are no indications that it is in any way compromised. But, again, peace of mind. Do what makes you happy.
Well, and Avast is from a Czechoslovakian
author. Yeah, right. Yeah. Right. So, which ones are in the U.S.? I still...
Well, even that doesn't matter. I don't want the California author. He's too liberal.
Right. I still use Clam, Clam AV. It is open sourced, and it is constantly being checked by people. So it's even easier to check because it is fully open sourced. And so I'm very happy with that one. It is not
Climb is from Cisco. I don't know about that.
Yeah, right.
Really?
And so, yeah, it's personal preference always. But particularly in these parlous times, if you're a little worried about Russia, then Kaspersky is not the product you want to be running. Although, as I continue to say, it is deemed safe.
What's interesting
at this point in time?
At this point in time.
Yeah, what's kind of interesting is that TikTok is owned in the large part by a company that is under the control of the Chinese government.
Right.
But that seems to be pretty popular too.
Right.
They were trying for a while to find an American buyer for it, and wasn't it Oracle and Walmart were thinking of buying it, and then that all fell apart.
Right.
That would have been funny if Walmart got it and put it up there with all their other pictures.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah, people of Walmart on TikTok.
Yeah. You can either go see the photos or the TikTok. A whole day's worth of entertainment.
Right.
In the morning, watch the photos. Afternoon, TikTok.
Yeah, does TikTok have a...
Yeah, if you want to lose a day, go to peopleofwalmart.com.
Oh. Yeah, no kidding.
That is...
You know, there isn't. TikTok is strictly
mobile.
Mobile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My wife didn't realize the photos of Walmart.
Yeah.
Until I showed her. She goes, no, that can't be real. Yeah, that's real.
Peopleofwalmart.com, I think it is.
Yeah.
It is so funny.
So we used to say about Second Life, you can put on your best pair of wings and head out for a night on the town.
That's exactly yeah. right.
And end up at Walmart.
You're right. I won't say anything bad about Second Life. It's where I met some wonderful, wonderful people. But it's been superseded, at least in my case, by things like the Mastermind Lounge, where you can see people for face-to-face for real and chit-chat.
One person I just happened to think of this week, and it was a great friend of all three of us, was Lolly.
Yep.
And it's like, I wish I had could have met her in person.
Yeah, that would have been nice.
She, you know, she was such a sweet lady. And she was such big fans of our show and constantly doing up all the different posters and everything else. And she was quite a remarkable woman. She worked for the FBI, folks. And unbelievable. And,
I thought she worked for NSA.
NSA. I'm sorry. Yes, I misspoke.
Unnamed exit on
unnamed exit.
Yeah,
she was a fine lady. We still see Dee was her friend as well. Dr.
Yeah,
Dolores. We still see her every Sunday night and every Wednesday in the lounges. So that's always a joy to see Dee. But yeah, it's there were a lot of really fun things about Second Life. I'm still a member. I should get out of there and stop sending the money every. However many months it is.
I still see posts from Karen and...
I see
Karen's mom.
Yep. Yeah. And Jim White and
yep.
All kinds of people. Yeah. We met a lot of really good people in Second Life.
Oh, we were in there for so long and it was a lot of fun. Like you say, yeah, it was just a great time when it was really going.
Yeah. But now it's been superseded by things like video chats, where you can actually see the real people.
Is it still even going still or?
Second Life, yeah, it's still there. It still goes.
Okay,
they still take my money. They still have about the same number of people that they've always had. It's just not.
Look,
the thing about the metaverse is that. Zuckerberg pushes it like mad, and nobody ever really pushed Second Life. And Second Life was easier and cheaper. You know, you already had a computer. All you had to do is download a free client. You were in.
Put it on there. And they kept adding so many features.
Right.
For if you wanted to do what they call build and all those other features.
Yeah, if you just wanted to wander around the virtual world, it was completely free.
It was completely free.
Yeah.
And if you wanted to chit-chat with people, that was free. Things like Mastermind Lounge don't have building or any of those things, but they're specifically for chatting.
Mm-hmm.
you know, for talking with people for various reasons.
People made a ton of money in Second Life by designing virtual clothes and virtual armor, and you could pay real money for it.
Right. And, of course, Zuckerberg wants you to move that to the metaverse, which I'm sure he'll start charging for any day now. But, yeah, it's a serious thing. I mean, there are people who really used it for making money. I knew a number of people who were severely handicapped. And, you know, these are in the days when people could go outdoors. They couldn't. And they lived a life walking, flying in Second Life. And it was a very
they
different...
They gained their freedom.
And they regained their freedom, yeah. All right, that music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank each and every one of you called in. You're the folks who've kept this show alive for all however many hundreds of years we've been on the air. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. We will be back next week. Please remember to vote in the poll. And if you've got something more to say about anything we've talked about today, join us in the forums. And we take a look at your stuff throughout the week. And if you do post something in the forums and you're asking a computer question, give us a lot of information. It's almost impossible to give us too much information. Generally speaking, we don't get enough. So we need you to help us there. We'll see you next week. Be back in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?